they kind of marketed it as, you know, get affiliate and start making money on Twitch and start your career. And you're not really going to build a career off of getting affiliate status, especially if you buy affiliate status. And at that point, you'd have zero people watching you. So it was kind of scummy marketing too. And I just think the whole thing.
Welcome back to the Gaming Careers Podcast. This week, we have some really interesting things to talk about. It's basically a bad time to be a small streamer or a small YouTuber, because not only are Twitch undercutting any affiliate by effectively allowing anyone to buy affiliate status now, but YouTube are also going to be putting ads on your videos and not sharing any of that profit with you. So there's loads to dive in with. I'm joined here today, obviously, with my co-host Benjamin Green. And Ben, we discussed this last week. We've never really talked about who you are and, you know, why you're on this podcast. So maybe let's do a little intro about exactly who you are, your podcasting experience, and what you're doing now with Lenovo.
Sure. Everyone's probably wondering who is this strange man Pete is talking to every week now. My name is Ben. I used to go by Greencord for a while. I just changed to Benjamin Green recently. But I formerly hosted the StreamKey podcast for about over 100 episodes or so as part of True Gaming. I since have moved over to working with Lenovo Legion, so I'm their community manager for the US now. But yeah, podcasting I've been doing for a long time, and I've been itching to get back to it. So when Pete hit me up and said, do you want to do this? It was like kind of the perfect fit. So I'm pretty excited about this. But yeah, hopefully that's a bit of background for you guys if you're curious, kind of my own experience in podcasting.
I've had a few people reach out to me and ask who the person is that I'm talking to, because they seem way better at it than I do. So it's nice for you to finally introduce yourself. Where do you want to start here? Because like I said in the intro, it's a bad time to be a small streamer or a small content creator. We've quite often on this podcast, or the reboot of this podcast, hated on Twitch for some of the decisions that they're making. They've made it like 4 for 4 now, with another week gone and another bad decision made with this Monster Cat partnership. They've maybe gone back on what they originally said due to the backlash, but let's first off, describe exactly what's happened for people that don't know.
Yeah, so for those that didn't see this, and probably most of you who have a Twitter account saw this, last week, Monster Cat announced that they were working with Twitch to add affiliate status, basically, to their Gold Monster Cat Gold membership, which is their paid service where you get access to their music for streaming. And the deal was, if you get the subscription, then after 30 days, you can apply for affiliate. And reading through it, it's basically guaranteed affiliate. Like, there's not really an approval process. You don't have to hit the same requirements, or maybe you did. They kind of went back and forth on this. But generally, it looks like you could just basically buy affiliate at this point instead of earning it. So understandably, there was a lot of backlash on that from the community. I do want to note that this actually, apparently it already happened too earlier this year with SoundCloud, but nobody noticed it. So it's not the first time Twitch has done this with a music service, but first time it really got a lot of attention. So pretty interesting. Since then, they've kind of gone back on it, it seems like. Monster Cat has completely removed this from their page. If you click on the offer now, probably because of the community backlash, I would guess. But I was not a fan of this at all. I saw a lot of different opinions on this in the space, and I feel like maybe I was in the minority in feeling like this was not very nice for affiliates. Pete, what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, let's just break it down, because Monster Cat are a company. They obviously sell a lot of merch, but their primary business model is copyright-free music that you can stream with, or you can upload to your YouTube videos with, you know, similar to a lot of the companies, Epidemic Sound, places like that. But they've basically made a bit of a name for themselves with electronic artists and some big artists as well. So Twitch is obviously trying to make partners with these companies because of this whole DMCA issue. But it's such a strange perk to signing up to the Monster Cat Gold, which is their premium offering. I don't know actually how much it is, maybe $5 or $10 a month or something around there, to offer a fast track affiliate status, effectively a bought affiliate status. Not only does that undermine every streamer that has reached affiliate legitimately, you know, grinded out to get the concurrent viewers to have the number of hours streamed, but it's just a strange perk. Could they not have, like, did they not have a meeting where they tried to come up with an idea to, like, make this partnership work? And why was that the idea? Like, obviously, there's going to be loads of backlash from that.
Yeah, it was very strange. Like I said, it was kind of weird, because Monster Cat did tweet out, like, hey, this doesn't negate your requirements for affiliate. It's just a fast track. But then that just caused more confusion, because it seemed like, what's the point of getting this if it's the exact same thing as regular affiliate? Like, what are you really offering? So I think there was so much confusion, they just canceled it. And to be clear, I love Monster Cat music. Like, I think they have some great stuff. And I've listened to a lot of it on stream. But this is not the way to do the partnership. And again, I saw a lot of people talking about how, like, you shouldn't care about this because affiliate is so easy to achieve on Twitch and it's not a big deal anyway. But I definitely think, even though it is, you know, pretty modest goal for people, like, you still have to achieve it. Twitch came out, we just talked about GlitchCon, and they celebrated like 500,000 affiliates on Twitch. Like, woohoo, that's a big moment, right? Not really if you can buy it. Woohoo, we had 500,000 people buy affiliate this year. You know, it's not the same kind of thing. So I'm glad they removed this. Hopefully it was that they kind of figured out it wasn't a great look. But yeah, hopefully we don't see more of this stuff. Because the thing is, if this starts this way, then that's a bad sign for, like, what are they going to do with partnership down the road or other types of things on Twitch that they could make behind a paywall. So it was a bad omen, I think, and I'm glad they backed down on it.
Spend $250 on Twitch merch and you can get partner. That's probably the next announcement that they're going to go with. I mean, yeah, it's just a strange decision. I hate the affiliate status on Twitch anyway. I think it's basically Twitch signing people to contracts very, very early on. Because like you said, it's not particularly difficult to hit. It is a bit of a grind, but, you know, the requirements aren't crazy. And they're basically signing an exclusivity deal where you can't, you know, live stream to another platform at the same time. Like, your content has to be exclusive to Twitch for 24 hours or something like that. So I don't like the affiliate status as it is. I think if you want to have some contract signed, which you probably need to have done to be able to have a subscribe button, it should be a higher requirement, so people have actually built an audience rather than just, you know, found three accounts or found three friends to watch you for a month. So I've got my own problems with the affiliate status anyway, but I just think this is just a bonkers decision. It's making me think now that Twitch has some real structure in their managerial side of the business that is just wrong. It's just messed up, because this decision can't have passed through 10 plus people and been approved. It seems like a rogue decision where people haven't thought about it at all.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like more and more, I have felt this way for a while, but they're just looking for more ways to make money, essentially, right? Off Twitch, like, what do we have that we can offer that we can monetize? Oh, affiliate status, we can make money out of that. So, and you made a good point too. I know there's a lot of debate on whether affiliate is good or not, but one of the other issues with this thing was that they kind of marketed it as, you know, get affiliate and start making money on Twitch and start your career. And you're not really going to build a career off of getting affiliate status, especially if you buy affiliate status. And at that point, you'd have zero people watching you. So it was kind of scummy marketing too. And I just think the whole thing, again, I'm glad they backed down on it, because it was not going to go well if they continued with it.
I mean, it was only a couple of weeks ago that we talked about the Streamlabs partnership where you could get, I can't remember the company name now, it's completely gone from my head, where you could effectively buy opportunities to be sponsored by a company through Streamlabs Prime. And we were like, why would you put money towards the chance of getting money back? And that's kind of exactly the same here, right? You're like buying Monster Cat Gold, which comes with Fast Track affiliate status, so that you have the chance of earning subscriptions back. So yeah, just crazy things. But then, you know, usually when we're complaining about Twitch, we're always finding points to come across to YouTube and saying how much better they are doing it. This week, I think they're just as big of a problem. They've announced that they're going to start running ads on people that aren't partnered on YouTube, and the creators of those videos on YouTube won't earn anything. That YouTube will just take the full 100% of the ad revenue. So just to describe what a partner and a non-partner is on YouTube, to be able to get into the YouTube partner program, you need to have hit a couple of goals. I think from memory, and I definitely should have checked this, it's 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 hours of watch time over the past year. So yeah, definitely a higher threshold than affiliate status on Twitch, but still, you know, in terms of YouTube, because of how it works with videos racking up views, not crazy high, but still there will be a very, very big proportion of people that aren't partnered on YouTube, because 1,000 subscribers, that is still quite a big goal to hit. It's easy for me to say, like, from my current position that it's not that big, but remembering back, like, it's a big milestone to hit, and there'll be a lot of people that are uploading content that won't be earning any money from their videos having ads run on them. And I'm starting to think that this maybe is YouTube, like, have done some analysis on viral videos, and a lot of viral videos will have come from just some random account where somebody's uploaded it from their phone, and then the video's gone viral and hit 10 million views, and because they weren't a partner, YouTube didn't put ads on it, and then they didn't earn any money from it. And they thought, how can we make, you know, 10% more revenue next year? And this was their idea. Did you see this news? Like, what's your opinion on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to be for the viral videos, right? Because, again, they're not doing this for those videos that are getting 10 views. They're not going to care about ads on those videos. But the big moments that come and go and their person isn't behind the partner program, yeah, you're missing out on all that revenue, especially if it gets shared multiple times on our socials and everything. So I agree, it's not a great feeling, especially because this is probably one of the things, if you're starting on YouTube, that's one of the benefits is you don't have to have ads on your videos, so you can kind of start with your growth first and then worry about the monetization later. I think it's a big benefit over like Twitch, right? Where even the affiliates, even the smallest streamers, they'll have ads and it's a big blocker. You didn't have that on YouTube as much because you can get right into the videos. So it's unfortunate this is coming. I understand, again, why it seems like you can't get away from ads on either platform at this point. They're going to be everywhere. But at least on YouTube, it's a better experience still, I would argue, especially with being able to skip through things. So while I don't love the change, I understand where it's coming from. It'd be better if they could kind of work out like a mid-tier maybe where it's not every video that's not in the partner program gets monetized, but like after a certain threshold, they start putting ads on it or something. That feels like a better trade-off, but you know, at the end of the day, they have to make money again from the business side.
There's another problem here, which is that you have no control over these ads as a creator, because when you are in the YouTube partner program, you get to choose what kinds of ads run on your videos, not in terms of necessarily categories of ads, but in terms of, do I want pre-roll ads? Do I want skippable ads? Do I want ads in the middle of my video? Do I want little display ads that come up at the bottom of my video rather than taking up the full screen that aren't a video? You get those choices every time you upload when you're in the partner program as to what kinds of ads you want to run. And you do have some limited control over denying certain advertisers from running on your videos. So we spoke a couple of weeks ago about those viral ads that were going around for CSGO hacks and things like that. You can block certain websites from being able to run adverts on your videos. But if you're not in the partner program, you're not going to have those controls. YouTube's just taking the highest bidder for running an ad on your video. And if you are one of those people that gets a viral video, and you know it's racking up millions and millions of views and you're not in the partner program, you might eventually hit the 1,000 subscriber threshold, but then it probably takes YouTube 2 weeks to accept you into the program. By that point, your video's finished being viral and they've taken all the money from it. You know, it sucks to be small on either of these platforms, but I don't really know what YouTube can do, because you know, if they've decided that they have to generate more money and this is the one of the ways they're going to do it, they can't just accept everybody into some kind of monetizable program, because they need everybody to sign a contract for that to happen. So maybe they'll introduce like a 3-subscriber threshold like like Twitch has and just get people subscribing, signing contracts for the platform. But yeah, it's just, I don't know, I just don't feel right about YouTube taking 100% of the earnings of anybody under 1,000 subscribers or anyone not in the partner program.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's just a tough situation, right? Because at the end of the day, it's just, there's nowhere else to go but YouTube. So where else are you going to put this kind of stuff? They kind of have the power, the monopoly to make these changes, and we just kind of have to deal with it at this point. In a different way than streaming, I'd say, because at least you can go to YouTube Gaming, Facebook Gaming. Like, if you're not on YouTube, where are you really going to go? Vimeo with your stuff? So it's just the unfortunate truth on YouTube right now. So hopefully, like you said, people can get quickly to the partner program if they have a video that takes off like that. But it's still going to suck for those people that are trying to put out videos and nothing's really landing. And it'll definitely slow the growth process down a little bit.
I think one thing we haven't even discussed, and this is probably a really, really small percentage of the audience, but there are probably some people that don't want to be in the partner program and have enough subscribers. People that rely on Patreon or, you know, are just creating for the hell of it and could have very, very big channels and have decided not to run ads. Or maybe they can't get into the partner program because of the kind of content that they're creating isn't seen as advertiser friendly or something. But certainly people that have very big channels but have turned off all ads just in favor of Patreon, there's definitely some big creators that do that. And then are YouTube going to start running ads on that? Because technically they're big enough to be in the partner program. Maybe the only way around that will be to actually be in the partner program and just turn off all ads. So you have the manual control and you're saying, don't run ads on my videos, and then YouTube will be forced not to. That's probably what they're going to have to do. So yeah, just YouTube's made so many good decisions recently, or it seems like they have, maybe just because of how many bad decisions Twitch has been making. But this one, rightly so, has been picking up a lot of flack on Twitter. I haven't really seen any response to it yet.
Yeah, I haven't seen a whole lot of response to it either. I feel like this one went a little bit under the radar, at least on my side. But it'll definitely, like, I think you bring up a good point. People who aren't in the program, who don't want ads in their videos, but still are large channels, I've definitely seen channels like that. So maybe it'll force people to join the partner program one way or the other. But yeah, I haven't seen a whole lot of discussion about this overall. Did you see, there was a little bit of good news this week. It's not all bad. Yeah, and I think in DMCA stuff, actually, there was the Cyberpunk announced that they have a streamer mode built into their game, which basically takes out any music that's copyright issue and it's going to get you striked. It'll replace it with safe tracks during the gameplay. So that's pretty cool, because this is a game that obviously a lot of people want to stream next month. And with everything happening with DMCA, there's a lot of concern about the music and soundtrack and in-game sounds. So it's pretty cool to hear that this game actually is built with the streamer mode coming right out of the box.
Yeah, I mean, that's very relevant. And I don't know if they've built that from the beginning of the game or if it's something that they've quickly put in now nearing release. But it's nice to see publishers really thinking about streamers when it's coming to this, and thinking about the copyright holders and making sure that their content isn't going to be unfairly played. I wonder if this is going to become the standard, honestly. It's definitely more work for every publisher to build, like, effectively two soundtracks to the game. Like, one that you can play on stream and one you can enjoy personally. But it seems like right now this is kind of the only solution for these bigger games that are going to have, like, you know, epic soundtracks that have been built specifically for the game, but the copyright lies with somebody else.
Right. Yeah, I think we will see more of this for sure. And to answer your first point, I think they probably made this recently. It's been in development for 10 years. So hard to say that they had this all the way since the beginning and more of a response to what's been happening lately, because it is going to get streamed a ton, right? So they had to have something here, I think. But yeah, I think we'll see more games continue to do this, or maybe just built from the ground up to be safe to stream. So they have licenses built into every track in the game or something. I think that's going to have to keep happening for at least games that want to see a lot of support on Twitch. And we talked recently too about some game companies saying, oh, you should pay us to get licenses and things like that. So maybe those companies won't bother. But yeah, I think most AAA companies that want to do this kind of thing should build streamer mode right out of the box, especially these days with how relevant Twitch is on kind of shaping the biggest games out there, and YouTube and everything else too.
We've seen streamer modes come into some games, but not really from the DMCA side, more due to like the privacy side. So if you're playing games like Valorant now have a streamer mode where it'll hide everybody's in-game name and just replace it with the champion name of the champion that you're playing. So people don't get, you know, millions of friend requests or, you know, abused because they're flaming their teammates or something like that. So it's nice to see that game publishers are starting to think about the fact that streaming is such a huge part of their game launch and their game's lifespan, and building some features in for streamers. But yeah, I think probably over the next couple of years, we're going to start to see a standard of how video games deal with music in-game. I'd like to think that most publishers buy full rights for their music in their games, and they understand that Twitch and live streaming in general is good for their game, and then they allow people to stream it with whatever music's included. But yeah, some of these more story-driven titles where they, you know, they have a certain score written for their music, probably do need to build in these streamer modes like Cyberpunk has. So I think that's a smart decision.
Yeah, I think so too. And to your point, I think we might see more licenses. Or we kind of joked about it before, the whole thing with the Google Stadia guy talking about licenses to actually play the games. But I think in the next 5-10 years, we might actually see more of that, because technically it's still kind of up in the air for a lot of games, whether you can actually play it or not. It's just sort of on good faith. So since we're going through this right now with DMCA and getting actual license, I don't think it's much of a reach to say that'll happen with actual game streaming soon, just that you have those full rights to play whatever game you're playing and not just kind of trusting the developer won't strike you for playing the game. So hopefully that'll come.
I wonder if Twitch will do anything with their like Twitch soundtrack side of things with game developers, where you can effectively split the audio and have some audio that is just stream friendly and some audio that is VOD friendly. You know, like, it's complicated to build, but they kind of already built the framework there in the background with Twitch soundtracks. So who knows how much investment that will end up getting. But it's funny how much we're talking about DMCA, but it's kind of being approached from multiple different angles now. It's not just the RIAA representing like the music industry, but also game publishers are starting to think about it. Twitch is obviously having to think about it a lot more. So hopefully this all gets a lot easier for the creators, because at the end of the day, that's what we care about, is for it to be easy for the creators, obviously for copyright to be followed. And, you know, the interesting point of view I think a lot of people have about DMCA is they like to shit on DMCA all the time when they hear it from Twitch and say, you know, oh, it sucks, why can't I stream with music? But if you flip the switch and you're the creator, and let's say you make a really sick video that takes you 2 years to make, and you've poured tons of effort in, and it's got 100 views on YouTube, and then a streamer watches it in front of an audience of 50,000 people, and you don't see any of that revenue or any of that exposure or anything like that, it just, all of it goes to the streamer. That does suck. And in that scenario, you want there to be a system where you can claim some of those royalties. So you can understand it, as long as you can put yourself in each person's shoes, you can kind of understand the situation. So we do want people to be able to protect their copyrighted content. It just kind of sucks when it's the music industry, like this behemoth coming and bearing over Twitch and doing it all in 1 week, or Twitch make it look like it's all done in 1 week, when really it's been, the writing's been on the wall for 5 years. But nice to have a little bit of positive news to say about Twitch. Another thing that we saw this week is that Twitch have partnered with Healthy Gamer GG. Have you ever caught his streams?
Yeah, I love this guy's streams. Everything he's been doing with Twitch and kind of mental health has been awesome. So I was pretty excited to see they did this with Healthy Gamer. And I gotta look a little more into what exactly they're doing for partners. But yeah, he's made some really great impact with a lot of top streamers and just getting some awareness out there for this kind of thing, I think, on Twitch by working with these big streamers. So it was pretty cool to see that they're actually developing a program alongside Healthy Gamer too. Have you seen a lot of his stuff as well?
Yeah, so maybe to just describe it to people that haven't heard of Healthy Gamer GG, he, and you can jump in here and correct me, I believe he's like a Harvard doctor who specializes in psychology or some aspect of mental health, and has become very popular on Twitch because he interviews big Twitch streamers and effectively sits them down for therapy. I mean, it's live therapy, which obviously will have its own issues, but he seems to be pretty professional about how he goes through it. And he's had some really famous interviews with very, very big streamers where he's really delved deep. You know, Wreckful is one. I don't know if you ever caught that before he passed away, but like really dives into a lot of underlying issues and helps people through them, really. And he's not, it really comes across as he's not doing it for the viewers watching, but he's actually doing it because it's helpful for the streamer. So it's nice to see Twitch partnering. Like you said, I don't really know what that's going to mean, if it's going to be some kind of, you know, content or course that people can follow along with if they're struggling with mental health, or if it's going to be, yeah, some resources or live streams on the Twitch channel. It'd be interesting to see what that is, but nice to see that more people are taking mental health seriously, especially when it comes to streaming, because it's a tough grind and it can be very taxing on your mental health as well as your physical health. And so nice to see Twitch taking that seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. So looking into it a little bit more, it does look like it is coaching, and they have like a limited number of spots for partners, but it's pretty cool. They have this personal coaching program on this stuff. And to your point, you talked about he does these live interviews and that has their own problems. But I think it's more about getting the awareness out there for this kind of thing. And so even though obviously a live therapy session is probably not the best way to do therapy at the end of the day, like you said, they have been really authentic sessions from what I've seen, and some really, really just true moments from both the creators on there, as well as I forget his name, I feel so bad, Healthy Gamer, the guy who actually does the interviews, Dr. K, yeah, he does really great stuff. So I think it's really cool to see stuff like this happening on Twitch. I hope that he continues to do more stuff like that. And this program is super cool. It'd be great to see it expand too, since it is kind of limited. If they can get something for all partners, even working down to affiliates, I think getting more awareness about mental health in general is always going to be a good thing on Twitch.
Yeah, I'd just like to see them create some resources, because obviously this guy can't, you know, sit down and help every single partner, because I think we heard last week that there's like 10,000 partners now, or 10,000 partners in 2020. So it's a crazy number of people. But if they can sit down and create some real resource for people that's accessible and useful, then that would be great. So what else did we see? We didn't cover this last week when we were talking about GlitchCon, because there was so much to talk about already, but there was a Twitch Rivals event at GlitchCon and some drama around that. I don't know if you managed to catch this or if you want me to go into it.
Yeah, I saw it, unfortunately. I wasn't watching the event live, but I heard all the fallout that came out of it. The biggest thing I think to talk about is the fact that XQC was stream sniping during the official event. And this is a big deal because it was a official Twitch event. XQC is in the top 5 streamers, I think, on Twitch overall. And he was doing it for entertainment, according to what he kind of talked about, but basically was stream sniping in Fall Guys, which of all games to stream snipe in, to make one of the other teams in the event lose, basically. And that was a big deal. There was a little bit of a couple of days where nothing was really said, but a lot of streamers spoke out and said, like, why was he doing this? You know, this is bannable. He can't be doing this kind of thing. And eventually Twitch did come out and not only ban him from Twitch Rivals, I think for 6 months, but also from Twitch for a week. So there were a lot of different views on this. Personally, I feel like it was something they kind of had to do. While it sucks for XQC, and maybe you can debate on whether it was really warranted because it was Fall Guys, at the end of the day, like, he's still a face for Twitch, and by doing this, they're showing that they're not going to take a different approach for one of their main guys versus anybody else. So I think it was the right decision. You have any thoughts on looking at how this unfolded?
Yeah, I mean, I want to ask, was there a prize pool behind?
Like, there was, yeah, that was a big issue.
I mean, that I think in that case, then you have to go through with a ban. Like, it doesn't really matter that it's Fall Guys. It's hilarious that it's Fall Guys that's caused this, because you think of Fall Guys being probably the least competitive esports, if you can even call it an esport. But if there's a prize pool behind it, and effectively you're stream sniping to give your team an unfair advantage, it's no different to that happening in PUBG or another actual traditional esport. Yeah, you can kind of defend it, and I get that he was probably doing it for entertainment purposes, but if there's a prize pool, what can Twitch really do? They kind of need to follow through with that decision, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And we were kind of waiting to see if they would say anything, because there were a couple of days of silence, but they eventually did. And there were a couple other streamers here who I didn't look into this one as much, but they kind of had the same thing happen. So again, I'm glad to see Twitch took a stand on this and did kind of remove them from Twitch Rivals, but also there was the penalty on their own accounts, just because if they hadn't, then for the next 6 months, a year, every time this happened, they say, well, XQC did it and he didn't get banned, right? So I'm glad that they took this stance here, even though, you know, the whole event was kind of a mess because you're trying to make Fall Guys competitive and
yeah, it's like open lobbies where, like, it's completely random. They don't have like a tournament mode where you can get, you know, 60 streamers in the same lobby. So it is random to some aspects, but I kind of, what can Twitch do? Because Twitch Rivals needs to have a blanket rule set for every Twitch Rivals event. And, you know, one of those rules need to be like some kind of integrity where you're not stream sniping, or you're not trying to find out information about who another player is and purposely targeting them, which is effectively what he did. So yeah, I feel like, I don't even know if Twitch Rivals is a separate entity to Twitch and, you know, who had to make this decision. But the fact that Twitch Rivals runs so many of these events, they have to have a blanket rule set. The bad thing from a streamer's point of view is Twitch Rivals is usually inviting like the bigger creators to these events, right? We're talking the top 1% of streamers, or like you said, top 5 streamers on the whole platform when we're talking about XQC. And they probably just see these tournaments as like more of a gimmick, like not really anything to do with the prize money, but just something a bit more entertaining where people are going to be more likely to tune in, because maybe you're going to get some viewers from other streamers coming across to your stream as well when they're eliminated. So maybe it's a good opportunity to grow their audience, but they're definitely not seeing it as this super competitive must win. Well, certainly not in Fall Guys, I'd hope, anyway, maybe in some of the other esports titles. But yeah, you've got, I think Twitch have done the right thing here. You know, banning him from other tournaments for 6 months, he's probably going to learn his lesson from that. And he's probably not that fussed about it. But then being actually banned from streaming as well, that's probably the bigger impact for him.
Yeah, he tweeted out an image of him just sort of sitting around the house doing nothing for the week that he's off.
It's the Pablo Escobar
meme,
isn't it? Yeah.
Yep. So that was pretty funny. I imagine, you know, sometimes streamers talk about having those bans as a relief, because then you can just kind of take a week off and you don't have that conscience saying I could be streaming right now. So there's that whole side to it. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I think he was probably trying to be entertaining and it was an in the moment thing. But still, it's an official Twitch event on the day of GlitchCon. Like, they have to take a stance there. So all in all, I think it was the right way to go about the situation.
The other thing that a lot of streamers have said is that when you get banned on Twitch, your comeback stream is like twice the peak viewership that you normally have because people want to know your opinion, you know, especially if you stay silent about it. He hasn't really said anything on Twitter other than that Pablo Escobar meme. So, you know, when he comes back, he's probably going to get more viewership than he would have had if he hadn't been banned. So it's that's a really weird situation where you want to be banned because it grows your popularity. But let's move on. What else have we got? Twitch added a couple of new features. Again, nothing talked about at GlitchCon, which would have been the perfect time to talk about these things, but maybe not the, the biggest of features. So they finally added support for two-factor authentication applications. So they previously had what I think is the worst kind of two-factor authentication, which is the text message one. We've seen plenty of accounts in on Twitch and on different platforms that are easily hacked with the mobile two-factor authentication because people can quite easily ring up their provider and change the phone number and manage to get the text message. It's just not particularly secure. So I believe that will be like the Google Authenticator and some of the other apps like that. So it's nice finally to have a bit more security around your Twitch account. And then the customized Now Live schedule widgets for iOS users, which this is like, I don't know if you use an iPhone yourself, but I do. And not many apps have built in these new widgets that have come out in the new version of iOS. So Twitch making this new live schedule widgets. And I'd really encourage people to actually check out the link in the description to this podcast where we can share a few screenshots of this because it looks pretty cool. You can effectively see when your favorite streamers or the streamers that you follow are going live as sort of a calendar view almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's actually super cool. I have an Android, so I'm pretty sad about the fact that I can't use these. And the other thing is, I think this is the kind of thing that's not going to be well known because they put out a tweet, but it's going to be so hard to find. But like the design they put into the widgets and how it looks and everything, how much customization there are. I think there's like three different types of widgets you can use or something. It's really smooth. It's a really cool way to kind of see instantly who's live of people you follow. Also, the schedule visualization is really cool. It shows kind of the graph of like they'll be live from this to from 3 to 5 and then X streamers on from 5 to 7. So that's super cool for planning. I think this is a really cool feature, but I'm kind of sad about the fact that I feel like people aren't going to see it as much. Like, I almost want to get this on Twitch in some capacity or to integrate into alerts somehow.
Yeah, and I felt like this a while, but I haven't spoken about it ever. But feature parity on Twitch is a big problem. Like, the Twitch desktop experience is what I would say is the best experience, especially with extensions. Like, I love watching streams with the Tobii Eye Tracker. I did a video on it, but it's like, it's so interesting if you're into competitive esports where you can watch somebody and actually see how they're like playing the game at a really, really high level, especially watching like Shroud play PUBG or something. And you can literally see how he's like looking through the trees for bodies and things like that. But you still, like 3 years after extensions have been built on desktop, you still don't get that on mobile. And we're talking about like the viewership for Twitch now creeping up and up from mobile. And then, yeah, now we've got features for iOS that we don't have for Android. And it's just, I wish they release features at the same time across full platforms because YouTube is super good at that. YouTube's app is like really good on mobile. You can Chromecast. All these kind of things are like really built in. And the feature parity there seems a lot better. But yeah, I agree. This is a really cool feature, but it's for iOS only. And 95% of people that own an iPhone probably aren't going to ever find this feature. But yeah, if you've ever seen a Gantt chart, if you're you know over the age of 25 and you've had a real job that revolves around project management, it's effectively like a Gantt chart of your followed streamers where you can see when they're going to be live, where the clashes are, who you want to watch at certain times. It's really cool. I think this would be an awesome experience to have like on your Twitch sidebar or something where you can see upcoming streams.
Exactly, like a calendar feature or something right there on Twitch you can navigate to that would have the layout of, okay, here's my day of streaming to watch. I've got this streamer on at this time, like a TV show basically, or a TV station. I think that'd be super cool to add to the native experience and not just as the third party, I guess it's first party, but the extra extensions and widgets on the iOS side. Again, I think those are great and I hope people do use them. You should use them if you have an Apple phone because they're super cool. But for everybody else, it's like, well, I'll wait till it comes to me, I guess. I'm not sure what to do there.
Yeah, and again, just like, it seems like a weird feature to be introducing because widgets only came out on iOS like in the last month. So I don't know if the like team that are building the apps at Twitch are just there like twiddling their thumbs like, okay, what can we do next? Oh, look, a new feature's come out. Let's spend a month building it. And they've built an awesome feature. But like, surely there's other things to prioritize. I don't know. I'm trying to understand the like the backroom management at Twitch. But can't complain about that because I am an iPhone user, and now I have like a Gantt chart of my favorite streamers and when they're going to be live, so I'll get even less work done.
Yeah, that's right.
What's the last thing we've got highlighted here is the Dr. Lupo news. Did you catch that?
Yeah. Well, we just talked about the past couple weeks of, I think, Pokimane and then Nightblue turning off their donations. So rather than doing that, Dr. Lupo has instead decided to pivot all of his donations and his tips to go to St. Jude for the rest of his streaming career, potentially, which is super cool. If you guys know Lupo, he's done a ton of charity stuff with St. Jude in the past. I think he's got some of the biggest records on Twitch for how much he's raised for St. Jude or just any charity in general. So pretty cool to see that he's taking all of his tips and taking them straight to St. Jude through Tiltify. And I'm sure he'll continue to do more events on top of that. So in terms of like people to look up to on the platform, it's hard to look past Dr. Lupo for especially the charity side of what he's been able to do with streaming and gaming overall. What are your thoughts on this?
He seems just like a super genuine dude. And like you said, previous years, I think he does a yearly live stream, or maybe it's like a week-long stream or something that he does for St. Jude, and he genuinely raises millions of dollars for like an awesome charity. So to see him now pivot and say, all tips for my stream forever are going to charity rather than to me, because, you know, he's clearly living a comfortable life, providing for his family, could probably retire quite easily. This is awesome. Like, I'm so glad to see that there's some genuine people in the Twitch streaming world. Yeah, like we said, Pokimane reducing her tips to $5. That's more about saving her viewers money, but Lupo going one step further and saying, not only can you donate as much as you want, but it goes all to charity. I think it's a cool trend to see, and it just makes you feel like there are people with some genuine personalities out there on the platform, and it's not all just like a quick money grab until they turn 40 and can no longer stream.
Yeah, that's right. No, I think it's really cool for people to look up to, have role models on the platform too. And I'm a big fan of anybody who takes gaming and streaming and does more with it beyond just kind of hanging out and playing games. But, you know, when you're supporting charities like this and making a difference, like, it just kind of is a testament to what gaming can do. And it's not just like this hobby that you can, it can be a hobby, of course, but there's so much more you can do with it. So I think it's super cool to see him do this. And I hope some other streamers kind of follow the same path. Like, I think while turning off all donations is a cool idea, it kind of makes sense to me just to pivot that to charity in the meantime, because if people want to donate, why not just give it to a good cause? So I feel like he took what Pokimane did and kind of went one step further with it, in my view.
Yeah, because he's still allowing people to effectively have their messages shown on screen, which is a lot of why people donate. But now people can feel even good about their donation. They're not giving money to a millionaire. They're giving money to a genuine cause that's probably going to use it in a really amazing way. So I think that'll probably wrap it up. It didn't feel like there was a ton of news this week, but then, you know, YouTube saved us and Monster Cat and Twitch partnership saved us with some things that we can hate on them for a good half an hour or so. So yeah, really interesting talking with you as always, Ben. I think our call to action this week will be again to make sure that you share this podcast with another streaming friend, somebody that think would enjoy hearing all the streaming news, offer some opinions. And like our call to action last week, make sure to hit us up on Twitter or in the YouTube comments if you're watching this on YouTube, just with your opinions, what you want to see covered. We're definitely going to start highlighting some of the comments and questions, I think, in future episodes, and making sure that we're covering exactly what you guys want to cover. So any last thoughts, Ben?
Yeah, same thing here. If you guys have feedback on either how the current episodes have been going, or you have requests on topics you want us to hit, whether that's news or maybe stuff around just streaming in general, we'd love to hear that on YouTube or anywhere else you can leave a comment. Twitter is also great. So hit us up there, guys. I really appreciate you guys listening to the show, and we'll keep trying to bring you more good shows each week, except for next week, I believe.
Yeah, so next week, probably going to be missing an episode. I know it's Thanksgiving over in the States. That nicely ties in with me moving house and probably having to struggle with internet issues. So we're still up in the air with a bit with our schedule, but maybe not an episode next week. We'll definitely make sure that we're sharing that on Twitter. But don't worry, the show isn't going to take any more six-month hiatus. I'm really happy now with this new format, getting to talk to you every week, and I think the audience are too. So yeah, echo what Ben said, and we'll catch you guys in the next episode.
Sweet. See you guys.